Republicans in the state legislature have proposed a bill that would give anyone who was displaced by the Los Angeles wildfires or Hurricane Helene in North Carolina a $10,000 income tax credit if they choose to move to Wisconsin. According to the bill, the goal is to draw people here to help address Wisconsin's workforce shortage, especially in healthcare. As natural disasters like hurricanes and wildfires are accelerated by climate change, Wisconsin and the Midwest are often labeled as climate havens. But will tax incentives or perceived safety from climate-related disasters actually entice people to move here? And is there such a thing as a climate haven? Alexandra Tempest is a journalist from Wisconsin reporting on communities affected by the impacts of climate change. Her forthcoming book is about climate migration in the United States, and she recently spoke with Rob Ferret.
Let's start with this idea of a tax incentive for people, you know, whose homes may have been destroyed by wildfires in California, hurricane and flooding in North Carolina. Is this the kind of thing that might lure people to a state like Wisconsin, do you think?
Possibly, but I would argue that most people have considerable ties to where they already live. Even if my house has burned down or been destroyed in a hurricane, a lot of folks are going to have kids in school or parents in a nursing home or, you know, established careers, certain legal requirements that, you know, require they stay in place. And so the contingent of folks who have the time and resources to pick up and move out of state is smaller than you might think.
And you've studied this. You're working on a book on this topic of how and where people move if they're worried about climate disaster impacts. What do we know? To the extent that people do move, how far do they tend to go?
Well, you know, it's hard to say for sure because, you know, the data is still emerging on this. But we do know that the scholarship shows that climate migration tends to be largely internal. That means within national borders, not across borders. So I think a lot of time in the media, we hear the term climate refugees, and that's sort of a legal misnomer. There's no such thing as a climate refugee in legal parlance in the international community. They don't receive the protections of refugee status. So most people who are moving because of, you know, climate-related reasons, it's one of several reasons they're moving. And we know that they tend to stay within their country's borders. As far as how far they tend to move, there was a study that came out in 2023 in Environmental Letters, I believe, that took a look at buyout data, you know, government buyouts given to people whose homes were destroyed in natural disasters like hurricanes and floods and things like that. And to the extent that they could, they tracked buyouts across dozens of years, across thousands of buyouts, and found that about 75% of them moved within 20 miles of their previous residence.
Within 20 miles. Not far.
Not far. Folks are moving across town. They're moving to one county over or maybe to a nearby city. You know, it makes sense that if they have local ties keeping them around, that they'll find a place with ample housing and that they will find a place with accessible services. But that doesn't necessarily require they move very far. And we also know that being safe doesn't necessarily require them moving very far.
Now, we hear this notion sometimes of a climate haven. Okay, hey, you're worried about X natural disaster, hurricane in the southeast, wildfires in the west, whatever. So we're going to find these spots in the country, and we see newspaper articles try to do this from time to time, that are climate havens. When you look into it, and some of the people even cited as talking about climate havens, they don't even buy this concept. What is wrong with this concept of climate haven?
Well, certainly, you know, when we compare different geographic locations in this country, everyone is going to have pros and cons when it comes to, you know, what they're exposed to environmentally. I think that climate haven has become sort of over the years, over the last decade or so, sort of a media invented term that has been used and I think co-opted by certain marketing efforts to draw people to specific regions, to cities, for example, that, you know, say, oh, we're well positioned. We have lots of access to fresh water, for example. We're inland and insulated from hurricanes. So that might be one way that, you know, a region or a city is marketing itself as a climate haven. But we know 99.5% of congressional districts in this country have had federally declared major disasters since 2011. We know that no place is totally safe, and that's something that even those who try to promote the idea of climate havens put that out as a caveat. And yet the idea is still communicated that places are climate proof. For example, the city of Duluth, you know, there was a economic development and marketing effort to see how it might look to promote Duluth as a climate haven. They hired a professor from Tulane, Jesse Keenan, to come in and try out different marketing slogans and try different sort of colorways and designs for these slogans on social media audiences. And, you know, it was even picked up by The Daily Show in a segment. And it was touted in a couple of New York Times features. And as far as we can tell, it may have had a contribution to about 2,500 people moving there in the last 5 years. However, has Duluth been a totally safe climate haven? Has it been climate proof? No. You know, they had this big generational storm just a couple of years back that wrecked 100,000 acres of forest land, for example. So that's just one example. There are many. And that professor, Jesse Keenan, I spoke to for my Guardian article, he says that it was a mistake to even put out the term climate proof as a testing slogan, even as a humorous testing slogan. He said it was a mistake. So I do think that people have gotten the wrong idea over time.
Talking to Alexandra Tempest about how and whether people relocate, move to another place if they're worried about the impacts of natural disasters, worried about climate change making those disasters more likely, and what people actually do when they're considering these questions. And Alexandra, that takes us to your work. You're working on a book on this. You're going to communities around the country that have been affected by various kinds of disasters. One of your starting points was here in Wisconsin in the Driftless region in the southwestern part of the state. We've heard about floods there over the last, couple of decades now. What kind of things did you go there looking for? What kind of stories did you find?
Well, I first went to the Driftless region back in 2018 to explore the history of Soldiers Grove, which some listeners may remember relocated part of its downtown. I mean, its whole downtown back in 1978 is when they started these plans. It happened over a number of years, but this was made national news at the time. It has, over time, become sort of a local influence 30 years later after the 2007-2008 floods. The neighboring village of Gays Mills also decided to sort of initiate a relocation project where they, you know, purchased a plot of land on a hillside out of the floodplain and allowed residents to voluntarily relocate there. And, you know, so when I went there initially, I was looking at the history, looking at how these things might be a model for other communities who are dealing with flooding. What I found out is that this history is very much alive and present. After the 2018 floods, I went back a couple of years following that to see what the recovery was looking like. And I was surprised to find that several other villages, including the village of Rock Springs, Wisconsin, were initiating relocation plans. This means knocking down buildings and infrastructure in the floodplain, in Rock Springs' case, the Baraboo River, and moving infrastructure and buildings and housing to land that is higher elevation. And so this sort of relocation, we might not think of it as migration. You know, we think of migration as sort of these big, long movements and these long journeys. But this kind of shows us over time how we're going to reconfigure where we'll live and how we'll make choices about where to build and where not to.
In the Guardian piece we've mentioned a couple times, you look in at Asheville, North Carolina, a place that in years before last year's Hurricane Helene, people had pointed to as maybe a climate haven, whether they use the phrase haven or not. And then unexpectedly, this flooding from a hurricane. I don't know. There seems to be a lesson here where if we think we have a climate haven, a place that's safe from the impacts of climate change, we might be wrong. What kind of lessons are you taking from Asheville?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, even as I mentioned, Jesse Keenan, the Tulane professor, had included Asheville on a list of his cities that were potentially best bets. And then afterwards, after Hurricane Helene, I mean, did emphasize there is no such thing as a climate haven. And so I think that Hurricane Helene now happening so shortly on the heels of it being sort of called a climate haven might encourage us to think a little bit differently about this. Of course, relocation and migration will be necessary. Of course, they're already happening. There are some populations that will be able to pick up and move wherever they want to cross country. But I think largely what we will see is folks who are moving more locally, who are relocating locally, and municipalities that are shifting where they build and what they look like. And, you know, insurance coverage, insurance dropping off in certain areas that are especially risky is going to encourage a lot of that before anything else. But we are seeing some interesting examples of it in Wisconsin.
Let's talk for a moment directly to people living in a community. They say, hey, I think there is some kind of risk of flooding, tornadoes, of course, what have you. And I don't feel like the leadership here is having these conversations about resilience and what to do and how to prepare. What would you suggest to just everyday people who want to kickstart that conversation and start finding solutions in their own community?
There are ways to, you know, bring it up as a concern locally to, for example, your city council. If your community, for example, is experiencing flooding on a level where you think that that community might benefit from a relocation project, these projects have in the past come directly from community members. It's unfortunately right now chaotic at the federal level where a lot of the funding ends up coming from. We've seen 200 jobs cut from FEMA since Inauguration Day, and everything is certainly up in the air as to how that will affect programs that then provide the funding to move infrastructure, housing, and, you know, residents out of harm's way. However, I think that organizing at the community level is where a lot of this begins.
Alexandra, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That was Alexandra Tempest talking with Rob Ferret. Tempest is a journalist who reports on communities uprooted by the impacts of climate change, and her piece in The Guardian is titled, "There Were Never Any Climate Havens." Coming up on Wisconsin Today, meet Dancing Sue, a folk dance caller in Viroqua.
The dance caller not only chooses what dances are done at a given event, but then they teach people what to do. And as the dance goes on, the caller is still prompting the moves.
That's next from WPR News.